This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio you have Dan Chenock, ACT-IACT Executive Vice Chair, and Rick Smith, ACT-IACT Co-Chair, Smart Lean Government Initiative at ACT-IACT. If you want more information, you can go to actiac.org. Both of these gentlemen, obviously, are working with regular organizations. And today they're talking about ACT-IACT and some of the initiatives they have there. But before we begin, perhaps we can get an introduction from each one of them, find out what their daytime job and what they're working with at ACT-IACT, and maybe put a framework on this conversation. Dan, tell us about where you really work during the day and your interaction with this group called ACT-IACT, please.
Sure, John. I'm happy to be back, and it's good to see you. In my job during the day, I am the executive director of the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which is a research and sort of a think and do tank that IBM funds to provide recommendations and advice and counsel to government agencies and stakeholders in the government community.
So it fits in real nicely with your activities with ACT-IACT.
Absolutely.
And Rick, what do you do? Your day job?
My day job, I'm with a company, my company, Maxima Performance Group. And what I decided to do was to take a six-month sabbatical from that and spend my time on this Smart Lean Government project that we're doing to try and see if we can't develop some better methodologies for government to create better value for its citizens. And you can find that at www.smartleangovernment.com. And you can see our practical guide and our other things, events that are going on as well. We're looking at this as a big initiative.
Well, good. So let's draw the picture, Dan, about what ACT-IACT really is and the two different organizations. They're separate, and their whole job between is intermediating and really helping government more efficient. So maybe frame it. Some people don't know. Most do, but let's just frame it for us.
Sure. Well, so ACT-IACT is a government industry collaborative whose mission is to leverage technology to improve government. ACT, which is the government side, the American Council for Technology, started 35 years ago in 1979 by a group of government executives who wanted to be able to work across boundaries more effectively. But 10 years later, those same government executives said, we need to work directly with industry as well. And they founded the Industry Advisory Council as a partner organization working underneath the umbrella of the ACT organization. At the time, it was called FGIPSI, the Federation of Government Information Processing Councils, and changed its name to ACT about 10 years ago. So it's very consistent with the notion that government and industry work together to work across boundaries, which is at the heart of the issue we're talking about today, the Smart Lean Government Initiative.
And I've interviewed enough high-level government executives to know that the fall conference in Williamsburg, the ELC conference, is where people go and they actually can sit in the lobby or can sit and have breakfast with someone who has a shared interest. Maybe it's a different agency, maybe it's a commercial organization, but I think it does smash the silos. It breaks down a lot of the barriers, and all of a sudden learning can be transferred. And, oh, that's what you're doing at EPA. Well, over here at DOE, we're doing this. And all of a sudden, why reinvent the wheel? Agencies.
Sure. The Executive Leadership Conference is one of the flagship events in the ACT-IACT year, and it's attended by hundreds of senior government executives and senior industry executives as well. And it's an opportunity for people to get away and share best practice and learn from one another. Absolutely.
Rick, my world is involved with software developers, and they have strange hours and strange appearances, and they really, really like to talk and argue about methodology and they'll spend 8 hours trying to show you three ways to solve a problem and not solve the problem or maybe solve the problem on the way out the door. So when I sit down with a software developer this afternoon and say, what do you know about this Smart Lean stuff? I may get a strong opinion on it. So what is Smart Lean? What does it got to do with software development?
Well, actually, the first thing it has to do with is the business transformation and the decision by the leadership in an agency or a industry supplier that the business processes to flatten the silos, to start using interoperable data. And that probably, from a software development standpoint, is the biggest issue. There are three main parts of Smart Lean Government, life events, communities of service, and service integration module. And the first part, the life events, is the key, because that is the package of the things that, for example, John, you have life events. You were born, you're married, you got kids, you may have health issues, and maybe a minor infraction somewhere in law enforcement.
Not too many felonies.
And all of this stuff is siloed away, mostly in the local computers. And it, when the government fetches it, it fetches it one at a time. And so, for example, when you apply for a passport, you go to the State Department, but you immediately go back down to the local government to get the data, and you have to go one silo at a time. And then the other thing, interesting enough, is 85% of your passport data would be good for a security clearance. And in this area, that's something that, again, all the data is at the local side, but the federal government has to reach in. So there's lots of opportunities for missed errors and all this other kind of stuff. So I personally am putting together a methodology for this life events, borrowing heavily from some work that was done in Europe about 6 years ago. And our hope is that the industry will grab this and say, we need to front-end our projects with this life event creation, and the rest of what we do well, we'll package that to give these value-oriented services.
A lot of events going on today in Washington, D.C. In fact, the HHS has an Office of the National Coordinator, and they're sponsoring an event today on interoperability just within the health community. So there's just so many different aspects of interoperability. That word is becoming more and more important with the proliferation of mobile devices and people trying to get information in different areas. So, Dan, from a corporate perspective, from maybe the IBM perspective or a large organization perspective, do they support smart lean government, or where do they stand on all this?
So smart lean government is really an outgrowth of the work that the federal enterprise architecture and the enterprise architecture discipline really created to allow a view across organizational boundaries, whether it's technology view, whether it's a data view, a business process view. And what smart lean does is to take that architectural construct and turn it on its head so that you're looking at it from the citizen's perspective into government, which is something that governments around the world have been trying to do for a number of years. From a business's perspective, this creates great opportunities to bring together lots of different applications and services that businesses provide so that they can put together a package that matches the suite of services that might go to an individual that, as Rick said, currently go in sort of stovepipe fashion, and the individual often has to piece together. From the perspective of businesses that work with the government, businesses can create solutions that cut across these boundaries.
When I use the word lean, I think of agile software development and the whole history of lean and going back to Japanese production and Toyota and everything else. And is this lean, does it draw on that background, or what exactly does lean word mean in this whole smart lean movement?
Well, I think if I could rephrase the question just a bit to say, does lean reflect the work of Deming as he brought it to the Japanese? The answer is yes, because you have to flatten the processes. You have to make sure that they go very quickly, not so much interaction unless you need it. So, for example, the idea that in licensing or finance in the federal government, every agency has its own pieces. And the point is that 85% or 90% of a licensing activity is basically the same thing. The data may be different, but the activity is the same. So let's get one licensing methodology going. Let's get one stack, say, for example, on the iPads or Android boxes or whatever, and teach our people to go in and do it. And the interesting thing is that a lot of this stuff hasn't changed in 50 years. I mean, people are still sending the same guy out to the same warehouse, asking the same questions, and we still have these glitches. So with technology and new ways of doing things, we can put together a better thing that will get us out there and get us moving. And that's the lean part of smart lean government.
So, Dan, if you're listening to this broadcast and it's 90 degrees outside and you're wondering about ACT-IACT, you can go to actiac.org. And I imagine if you search under Smart Lean, you'd come on a document. Is that right? They'd stored somewhere? Where would it be stored?
That's right. ACT-IAC is the sponsoring organization for Smart Lean Government for the activities that Rick and his colleagues, who are both from government and industry, are working on. The Enterprise Architecture SIG, which is actually now called the Planning and Architecture Shared Interest Group. Mm-hmm. So in ACT-IAC, there are a number of groups of technology executives and leaders and experts who come together around particular areas. So there's a group called the Planning and Architecture Shared Interest Group that is the sponsor for the initiative. And if you go to the website, you can find more information about it that way.
Let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this practical guide that was released in November of 2013 and how listeners can go to this guide and maybe learn, interact, and learn more about Lean and find out how it compares to different ways to interoperate with different systems in the federal government. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dan Chenock. He's here on behalf of ACT-IACT. We have Rick Smith on behalf of ACT-IACT. And we're talking about an initiative that ACT-IACT is talking about and promoting, and it's called the Smart Lean Government Initiative. And you can go to their website and type in Smart Lean Government and find out. In fact, there's a practical guide there. And before the break, we talked about this practical guide. I went there this morning, and I noticed the first sentence was, government is a service provider. And I said, well, isn't that a provocative statement? Government is a service provider? Well, I guess they are, aren't they?
That's right, John. And if you think about all the things that government does, we rely on government more than we think. We rely on government for when we reserve a campsite, when we get a loan to go to college or university, when we start a small business. There's lots of services that the federal government provides. And the idea of government thinking about providing those services in an integrated way across boundaries and designing technology and business processes to do that. So more than just coordinating, actually delivering the service in a lean way and smartly, just as industry has looked across its boundaries to provide services in a similar way, matches how individuals go to the web and look across boundaries to get information and access services when they go shopping online.
And when you look at 25 years ago when they started formulating these concepts for lean, the objective was in manufacturing to produce an automobile. They didn't care about all the different functional parts. The objective was to reduce waste and produce that automobile efficiently. And so that's what we're trying to do with this, is produce services for citizens that are efficiently produced and nothing's wasted during the process.
Right. And I think, and if you, John, if we want to continue with the automobile analogy, you know, there was the Rouge River plant at Ford in the 30s where they made steel at one end and kicked cars out the other. And they found that that wasn't necessarily the best way to do the supply chain, this kind of stuff. And
Henry Ford learned a lot in that, didn't he?
He did. But it got things rolling. Well, the Smart Lean Government's the same thing. I mean, in the practical guide, we have the core concepts is the first volume. We then talk about the strategic roadmap and how you would get there. And then the third one is tactical implementation. And we are going to be running workshops with ACT-IARC membership and hopefully the community to build out these concepts. So there really will be some methodologies and some interaction. But back to your thing about the automobiles, as you put various places out for making seats, making cars, and bringing them in and on-time basis, the same thing is true with government services, because most of the data about citizens is collected locally, either at the county or the local city. And there's a lot of talk now about smart cities, Singapore, in the Emirates, and there are four places in London that are doing it. And they're really working hard to try and get this data unsiloed and out to where it belongs. So if you look at the five tiers of government from federal, state, local, tribal, and the other, and which one specializes on what data, and you kind of have a peer as you're running through and grabbing the data. So I have this idea that maybe passports, for example, could be created by, in locally here, the county of Fairfax or the county of Arlington, because all of the data is captured there. Now you need service level agreements and MDUs and this kind of stuff, financial arrangements, in order to make that happen. But it would be much more efficient, because then the county would be responsible for putting together those life events, which would create that passport thing, and the thing could be done in less time and a lot more accuracy. My personal thing, I've had a passport since I was 8, and last year was the first time they finally got my birth date right. And I just never bothered to change it because it was too much hassle.
Yeah.
And I hope nobody's listening is going to throw me in jail. The other thing is that we might want to talk about this in the next segment, is there's a revenue opportunity here for government, because if you start doing a fee-for-service as opposed for a tax to the general fund, and you could actually get the citizens to anticipate and want to get a fast-acting service from the government, there is potentially a fee-for-service, and maybe some of the burden of the tax and stuff would not one size fits all. Everybody pays, you know, so much percentage. We get down to people individually making their selection.
So, Dan, let me try to put this in perspective. So Smart Lean Government, SLG, how did this come about? Is this something that's been percolating for the last 4 or 5 years in the ranks and someone just become a champion for it, Rick? Or how did this ever, where did this evolve? Where did it come from?
Right. So building on what we talked about earlier, it really comes out of a number of strands and disciplines that have been impacting government for several years and actually for over a decade. One is the enterprise architecture discipline and area that we talked about, where and the federal enterprise architecture, as it was developed in the early in the Bush administration when I was still at the Office of Management and Budget, was really a way to look across agencies and identify where are the technology opportunities, the information opportunities, the business process opportunities to bring things together. If you combine that with the ability of technology now to expose lots of information in ways that you couldn't do before, it creates an opportunity to really make architecture real in an operational way and to allow that to be used as a way to think about service provision, looking across boundaries. And then as governments around the world are looking at bringing information and services together, like Canada with its Service Canada model, or Australia or the UK, or in this country, going from the Quicksilver initiatives in the last administration to the cross-agency priority goals in the current administration, it really builds on all of these disciplines to say, how can we bring these strands together to allow government to provide information more efficiently and effectively to serve citizens?
And so, Rick, this isn't a matter of working harder or putting an extra hour in every day or not eating lunch. I mean, this is eliminating duplicate effort. So it's not about, you know, increasing efforts. It's coordinating things in a more efficient manner.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that you don't have to say any more. That's exactly what it's supposed to do. And every area, and as Dan just said, that the last 3-4 administrations have all tried to focus on this thing, but, you know, pulling the licensing function out of HUD and Department of Agriculture and DOD and everywhere else and saying, well, we're going to have a standard, you know, that's a problem. People aren't used to dealing with that. And somehow we're going to have to increase the trust. We're going to have to show people that it can be done faster and easier, and that the people, they're not going to get replaced because, at least in my opinion, there is a shortage of federal FTEs, and that they'll be thinking smarter about ways to improve these service deliveries.
Dan, I listened to sports radio, and I was listening to a guy named LeVar Arrington yesterday. He's a mm-hmm. big, strong guy, and he's talking about, you know, when I have to come up against another big, strong guy, I have to use my feet and leverage. I can't just use my upper body, feet and leverage and timing. And when I looked at ACT-IACT and the objective here is to reduce cost of government, make it more efficient. And so you must view this as a leverage point, or ACT-IACT is the leverage point you can take and make an impact in the government by improving their efficiency by using smart lean government. It just seems it's an exact parallel, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a way to think about using the tools that industry has working with government, which is really at the core of what ACT-IACT is as an organization, to identify those efficiencies, but also it's not just about efficiency and cost savings. It's about providing services in ways that citizens can really use more efficiently and effectively. To take Rick's example, if getting a passport becomes much easier at the local level and also more accurate, that's both an efficiency in providing for less total government to provide that service and also effectiveness in getting a better result for the citizen.
Yeah, it's not working faster at all. It's thinking from an architectural perspective and saying, well, it may be better to structure the process this way more efficiently. It's almost an analytical skill. We can take a break. We can come back in a couple minutes. I want to talk more about a practical guide. It's not called a theoretical guide, is it? It's called it's like applied engineering rather than the theoretical engineering. You know, I
yes.
have a daughter who studies engineering right now, and she had to take courses in applied engineering. She's a civil engineer, and she said, Dad, I got to build a dam.
Yeah.
Well, I have to build a lake, and it's applied. So, a practical perspective, you can interact with this guide and make comments and kind of develop your own understanding of smart lean government. And when we come back, we'll talk more about what this practical aspect is all
okay.
about this and where it fits in with workshops and ACT-IACT.
Be happy to.
You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking about smart lean government, in fact, a smart lean government initiative from a group called ACT-IACT. Many listeners have heard that. Maybe they've seen advertisements for it. You can get more information at ACT, IAC.org. They put together workshops and programs, and they try to help federal information professionals use their job more efficiently and try to figure out how to become better at their job. We're talking about a new initiative called the Smart Lean Government Initiative. And before the break, we talked about the whole practical nature of this. So why is this a practical guide, Rick? Is this something I can interact with and learn and maybe share information with other people? How does this thing work?
Well, the way it works is we put together the three volumes, core concepts and then methodologies and then the tactical implementation. And to give you an example, I am putting together two workshops on developing the life events methodology. And we're going to create a taxonomy, and we're going to create what happens to life events in a data exchange or a data server, and how we provide the data, gather the data, and provide it. And we will then take our results and put them into the practical guide. It won't be a series of PowerPoints. It's actually going to have physical data. And I've been running around for the last 4 months to talk to the local counties and federal agencies about, you know, where we can try and try this out, because there's an enterprise architecture piece to this. There's the data piece that I mentioned before. And then there's the classical systems integration piece that you have to put together to make it all tie together.
So, Dan, where is this going to take place, and can listeners participate or sign up or register?
So there will be multiple opportunities. On February 20th, there's an initial launch of Smart Lean Government that ACT-IAC is hosting. It'll be at the Deloitte offices in Northern Virginia, and there will be...
Right, Roslyn, here in the Metro.
That's right. That's right. Tom Davis, former Congressman Tom Davis, will be one of the speakers at that event, and he's a big supporter of this initiative. There will be other programs. As Rick said, there will be workshop, and the Planning and Architecture Shared Interest Group in ACT-IAC will be... a resource for this, as well as the Smart Lean Government Initiative itself. So there will be lots of opportunities to interact.
In my world, that's called a campaign. It sounds like the opening cannons in November with this practical guide, and now we have the troops coming in with all these different initiatives. It seems like it's a practical way to solve a lot of the problems with, okay, you've got reduced staff. We know that. We've got reduced budget. Okay, you have increased security concerns. Okay, and how are you going to put all these things together? You know, in the commercial world, people just walk away, but in the federal world, they have to comply with certain standards for security with reduced budget. I mean, it's I want to do a whole show on, you know, how acquisition reform is changing the way people are procuring things because of security regulations. And this can probably help with that process.
And John, that brings up a very good point, because one thing that the commercial people are allowed to do, and we were talking about building cars, is they're allowed to fail. You can have an Edsel and not necessarily go out of business. The federal government doesn't have a mechanism for failure. I mean, it goes on the front page of the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Financial Times, and you know, all hell breaks loose. And, you know, somehow in this acquisition thing, we're going to have to make a way of trial and error. Now, in the DOD back in the 60s, they did actually do some of this stuff, because they were taking chips and were taking stuff and putting it together. But today, everything is expected to be perfect. The other thing about this particular thing is that we are doing asking all the standards bodies to come together, so OASIS and OMG. And so I work with those guys every day about the life events concept. I mentioned the OASIS Transformational Government, and also OMG has done an awful lot of work on interoperability. And we bring all these people together, and we put together, and the methodology that we do, the standards say this is how you do it. The methodology is a way to use the standards to make things happen.
So ACT-IAC just released last week a paper on how to buy and build systems in a modular fashion, which speaks directly to standards and interoperability and reusing components and doing things that are commercial best practices by looking at what you can plug and play into your operation to be more efficient with the resources that you have. And this is something that OMB and the administration requested, and ACT-IAC came back with a paper on that. There's also, of course, a lot of interest in using open data and APIs to enable agencies to put things together in new ways that can cut across boundaries and don't necessarily have to be rebuilt. So all of this fits together in a stream of following what the industry is doing to basically build systems and design services that cut across boundaries and provide for a better experience.
I'm going to toss out a bunch of acronyms about my listeners and know what these acronyms are all about. We're talking about ACT-IAC, we know that, and you work for IBM, but before then you work for another group called the OMB, which is the federal. So you've got this unique perspective where you can look at it from an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman. You know, you can look at it from, well, you know, from the IBM's perspective, but also, look, when I worked at OMB, here was my problem. And what was your experience when you worked at OMB at this concept of smart and lean?
So at OMB, we were doing things in a similar way. We were trying to look at things, especially through initiatives that cut across agency boundaries. For example, in the Clinton administration, when the first portal of the U.S. government was created, the portal that's now known as USA.gov, that was FirstGov at the time, was really an attempt to bring together experiences across agencies in ways that citizens were using the Internet at the time, which for government was still very new, to provide a better experience, to provide a better service as they interacted. Similarly, in the Quicksilver initiatives in the Bush administration, OMB tried to look across boundaries and think, how does a citizen access these services? So fast forward to today, technology allows you to really bring information and tech and computing resources together in new ways that you couldn't think about 10 years ago to provide better services and to provide a better experience for citizens.
And Rick, when it comes to life events and citizens, here we go. There's the theme, life events, citizen services, and government as a service provider. The idea is that if you book a flight to the Caribbean and you don't have a passport and you want to get it quickly, this is an application where a government can provide a citizen service quickly and efficiently.
Right, exactly. And for example, with the work that Dan was just talking about, I'm having a meeting tomorrow with the MyUSA.gov to talk about their future potential and how they are going to get to using life events and this community of services up and down the tiers of government. They are serving the feds just fine right now, but how are they going to do it? I also want to put in a commercial for on the 20th of February. We're doing seats in the chair, and we're also having a webinar. So when you go on the ACT IAC site, you can sign up for the webinar and have the whole conference delivered to your door. And one of our featured speakers is Eric Sweden from the National Association of State CIOs, and he's got a panel of state CIOs talking about how they have done case management citizen services somewhat in the absence of the federal help. I mean, it's
and Dan, these are the guys who've been out in the streets getting beat up and knocked around and have practical experience, don't they?
That's right. And really, picking up on your question earlier, how does this build from things that have happened before? Life events go back even to Vice President Gore's National Performance Review, where they tried to put together teams of people across agencies. And then that allows people to come to today and the current administration's perspective on working across agencies to provide these services to help citizens in ways that that can address the situation that you described.
I have a lot of students and listeners that attend webinars, and they read blogs. And my blog is called the Tech Tuesday blog. I'll be blogging about this interview today. Dan, can you recommend a blog for our listeners to read to maybe get some more information about this?
Well, I certainly would recommend the blog at the actiac.org website.
Well, you better. So that's a good one. It's very topical. And I'm just thinking about these State Department CIOs who, it's almost like, you know, politics, they say, well, a state government has to balance a budget and really has some serious problems to handle, and that's why they're good at higher levels. But a state CIO, guess what? They have a very limited budget, and they have the same deadlines a lot of people have, and that's a place where either survive or don't survive, isn't it? It's a tough world there in the states.
No, absolutely. I mean, in fact, the state of Colorado has they created a thing in 2012. It's called the Citizen Engagement Platform. And they bought the software to run it, but they haven't got the money to create the life event type of data in order to have the citizen direction. I believe they're starting to work on it now, but again, it's a budgetary thing, and it's also trying to, it's the trust. How do I go to your program and ask you to give me a couple of million dollars to put into my program that's going to cut into your program a little bit? Now, I believe it's going to make yours better, but you may not believe it. You know, I mean, there's a whole set of things that you have to overcome here in terms of trust and confidence that you're going to build the right one, which is why we want to do methodologies. You can actually see it running.
So where's Tom Davis fit in this? He's just a proponent of this as well?
That's correct. And if you think about where Congress fits in and where the leadership of the administration fits in, really, they support this initiative from a number of perspectives. One of the key initiatives that this administration has been doing that enables SmartLink to succeed is the National Strategy of Trusted Identities in Cyberspace. Because if you're a citizen, the NSTIC, if you're a citizen and you're coming to try to access one of these services that Rick described, you want to be able to sign on in a consistent and similar way, regardless of what agency or what company you're accessing that service through. And so the NSTIC is trying to provide for that interoperability, and it's very parallel with the Smart Lien concept.
But NIST has got all kinds of smart folks out there. I'm trying to drag one down, get them in the studio and say, okay, tell me about NSTIC and what are the challenges and opportunities here? Because, boy, what a great group of people up there. And this is their proponent. It fits in exactly with what Dritt was talking about earlier about citizen services and efficiently cutting across platforms.
Well, you know, you might want to do that in a two-phase platform. You could talk to the FICAM guys over at GSA and set a level base and then bring in the heavy guns to add to that.
The smart folks, yeah.
Because we're starting with the FICAM stuff because, you know, what you need to do there is do the roles and responsibilities and make sure that you've got the stuff down so you can get to it.
My role is to take a break for a commercial, and we're going to do that right now. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have the ACT-IACT show. We have two gentlemen from ACT-IACT, and we're talking about a concept here called Smart Lien Government. And ACT-IACT has a Smart Lien Government initiative. You can go to actiac.org and type it in the search engine there and find out more. But in fact, you can find a practical guide on that. And that's what we're discussing today, practical aspects of a whole idea of lien government approach and what it means to our listeners. Many of my listeners are involved in the Twitter world, and you can follow my tweets at Ray Gilray. I guess ACT, I actually got a Twitter handle, too. Is that right, Dan?
It does, and so do I. I'm at dchenok, D-C-H-E-N-O-K.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And
I'm at R. Smith MPG.
I had a guest on 2 weeks ago. He had 20,000 followers.
Wow.
Amazing Twitter followers. He tweets 18 times a day. It's really, and it's a guy who works out of Oregon. He got all his followers on the East Coast. It's kind of interesting.
Well, but my teenagers gave up on IM and messaging, and they use tweet now all the time.
Yep. That is old school stuff. Every single one of my guests have to go through this 10-question test, Rick. And we try to determine if you are, in fact, a card-carrying nerd. And I used to listen to radio shows, and I'd go, well, geez, that guy's a security expert. What kind of phone does he have? And so I'm going to ask you 10 questions. You're going to find out your category, your rating as far as nerd goes. So, Rick, I break into your house this afternoon. How many desktops are going to be sitting around your house?
One.
Just one, okay. How many cell phones have you purchased in the last year?
15.
Really?
Yeah.
15. Are you getting some nerd points there? Do you have a personal Twitter feed? Yes.
Yes.
Do you have a personal blog?
Yes.
Okay. And do you use any personal online backup services?
Not yet.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you use?
I'm sorry, Apple Cloud. Okay.
What kind of smartphone do you use?
I have a Galaxy 3.
Apple Cloud Galaxy 3? That's interesting. And how many apps have you used on that in the last 30 days?
25.
Getting some nerd points here, Dan. You got a challenge here. Break into your house this afternoon. How many tablets do you see floating around your house? How many tablet devices?
Three.
Okay. What social networking sites are you active in?
Do you count PCs as tablets?
Nope.
No, because we got seven of those.
No. And how many social networking sites do you participate in?
Me, I have Facebook. I have...
Okay, no problem.
Yeah.
And last
LinkedIn.
Book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Kindle.
So, electronic. Well, that's a surprise. Dan, you're going to have to challenge this gentleman here.
Yeah,
Dan, your house, how many desktops you got floating around your house?
Three.
That's negative, actually, because desktops are old school.
Well, wait, no, you said laptops were considered desktops?
No, I'm just a desktop, like a
okay,
standard desktop.
Three,
okay.
Well, he missed my nine.
Yeah, and how many cell phones have you bought in the last year?
Has our family?
Yeah, this is a family.
Four.
This is incredible. From 10 years ago, think about that question from 10 years ago. This is amazing. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
Yes.
Okay. You have a personal blog?
Yes.
Okay. And do you use any personal online backup services?
Gmail, and then I have a hard drive online backup that I have in the house, but it's not online.
No, that's strong. That's strong nerd points for that. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have BlackBerry.
BlackBerry. That's interesting. I don't hear that very often. And I guess there are apps available on the BlackBerry. How many apps have you used in the BlackBerry in the last 30 days?
Three or four.
Okay. And how many tablet devices do you have at home?
Two.
And any social networking sites you're active in?
Yes.
LinkedIn?
LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook.
Okay.
And if you count my kids, I add about 10 to that.
Yeah, or 100. Everyone can say that. Last book you read was electronic or paper?
Paper.
paper. Well, this is, I'm going to have to put this through my UNIVAC computer in my basement and find out. I think this is really, you may have to have a wrestle off or an arm wrestling championship at the end of this interview to find out.
By the way, I'll be one of the last converts to reading a book on a tablet.
Yeah, I like both.
That's what I thought, but I only use Kindle.
Yeah. Someone convinced me, said, if you're stuck in an airport, guess what? You've got all these options that you may not have if you go through. But that's interesting. Look at 5 or 10 years down the road and see, well, see what's going to happen to the federal government? Is this going to be adopted? This whole idea of smart lien seems to be percolating in the government for a few years, and now all of a sudden there's this little mini campaign. ACT is pushing it through. Is this going to be actually a big change in development in federal IT, or what's going to happen, Dan?
Well, if you look at the direction of technology and the direction that the administration is looking in the future to bring together programs and services and reorganize around services that citizens receive, for example, the administration's initiative to bring together business activities that's resulted in the businessusa.gov website, I think you're going to see a continued evolution in this direction. And Smart Lien Government is trying to help be a force multiplier. And ACT-IAC and the Smart Lien Government activity that Rick is the co-lead of are really trying to help channel a lot of resources to try to get the government there more quickly in the same way that the private sector is moving now.
So, Rick, we can go to smartleangovernment.com and learn more. You think they're going to be taking advantage of some of these concepts in the next 5 or 6 years, or are they going to be so worried about the new Android operating system that they can't be concerned?
I think that it's interesting because my son just got sent down to the Senate as an intern for Senator Baucus, who's going to be ambassador to China. And every time he goes down there and he comes back, I'm talking to him about what they're talking about and what he thinks. And, you know, I see it that there's going to be some kind of revolution in the sense that the younger people, you know, the digital has taken over, and if they can't get it, they're going to invent it. So it's going to be, are you going to get it through Facebook? Are you going to get it through Twitter? Are you going to get it through the government? And then they're going to have, you know, people exchanges. I was trying to refinance my house. I got 45 different letters. These guys had pictures of my house. They knew how much I earned. They knew what my taxes were. They knew everything about me. Now, privacy data, I don't know, you know, where they got it all, but they got it. And so if the government doesn't act, the country is going to react in terms of private industry and other places. I mean, you look at Singapore. You know, that's probably the safest place in the world to go. And you go and look at the way they handle terrorists and the way they handle a bunch of other people. They really have their act together. Now, they're not 300 million and a few other scale problems, but the simple fact to focus on it. The Emirates, when I did a Google on life events, I found the Emirates, Romania, Thessalonica, Greece, and OPM had a small little piece for benefit, for federal benefits. And I thought, oh, my God. So I went on the Emirates site, and they've laid the whole thing out because their whole thing is delivering stuff to citizens. So
yeah, you've got to compare things fairly. There's a fellow by the name of Tom Davis. I've met Tom. And when I met him, he seemed like he was a regular guy. He's been in a lot of different places, done some things, local government, federal government, and he seems to have a practical approach to this. And I think this is one of the reasons why you're working with him at Deloitte in this whole project. Is that right, Dan?
Yeah, Congressman Davis brings a lifetime of service both at the local level in Fairfax County, at the congressional level as the chair of the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee, now in private industry. And he can really bring together and is a great supporter of this initiative. So we're very happy to have him as a partner.
I keep thinking of the sports initiative where Tom spent some years in the minor leagues on buses, going small towns, and he played the big leagues. And now he's a color commentator. And all of a sudden, he understands exactly what's going on. And he knows some of the fights he's going to have with trying to move to smart and lean. That's the case. FICAM, FICAM, tell me more about that. You mentioned it in the previous block, Rick.
Yeah, that's the identity management for the federal systems, civilian at least. And it's being done by the GSA and the Office of OGP. They've put together 4 or 5 books. You can get it right off the website. And they talk about how to handle identity management, how to do the governance, how to do the implementation, what you need to do in terms of your computer. The woman that was heading it, maybe still is, Deb Gallagher, She's been on that project for at least 5 or 10 years, and she really knows what she's doing.
You know, Dan, if you sat in a Metro train and you sat next to someone and talked about government identification, then people get kind of scared and don't want to talk about that. And I'm just wondering how this fits in with life events and federal services.
So, again, it's a way that if you are dealing with getting an educational loan from the government, or you're going to try to access Medicare services, or you're going on vacation and you want to go through the State Department's information about which countries are safe at the moment because you want to take a world tour. All of these things require you to sign on and conduct transactions, and often in different ways depending on which agency and which identity process they're asking you to log on with. And so the FICAM, the Federal Information Credentialing, Federal Identity Credentialing and Access Management Initiative, as Rick said, at the General Services Administration, is the federal piece now to the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace that NIST is overseeing. And it really creates a foundation to try to say, all right, it doesn't matter what agency you're coming into, you want to be able to provide a credential that allows you to access that service. So it's very consistent with this life events concept.
If you are sitting at your computer, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and it's 90 degrees outside, and you type in lean government and you stumble on this interview, you can always go for more information at actiac.org. You can find out more about this practical guide and find out workshops that are taking place where you can actually sit down and ask people about their experience in this and see how it might apply to your agency.
And you can help build it.
Yeah. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Dan Chenock, ACT-IACT Executive Vice Chair, and Rick Smith, ACT-IACT Co-Chair, Smart Lean Government Initiative.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.